I am Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And we're paranormal specialists who live in the most haunted city on Earth, Savannah, Georgia. Every day is Halloween in our line of work, so join us as we spin true tales of haunts, murders, and disturbing Savannah history. I'm Madison.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to the most haunted city on earth. Hey, y'all, before we get into this episode, we do have exciting news. Our podcast has been nominated as Best Local Podcast here in Savannah by Connect Savannah. Every year, they have their Best Of competition. It's a very acclaimed competition here in Savannah. And so it's a really big honor to be nominated for it. We really do need your help voting, though. You can vote every single day, and we have a link in our description for it. So it is under Best Local Podcast for the Most Haunted City on Earth. But while you are there, we are nominated for some other various ventures. So Savannah Underground is nominated for Best Local Theater Production. And Chris's improv troupe, Oddlot, is nominated for Best Local Comedy Troupe. And then JT was nominated for Best Local Theater Director, and that is under John Taylor Timmons, if you didn't know his full name by now. So, but we do really appreciate you guys voting, and it is a big deal if you win this competition. So let's be the first ghost podcast to win that category.
Come on.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Most Haunted City on Earth. My name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And I'm JT Timmons.
And you might be wondering why, if you're watching this and not listening, why we have a big cupcake in front of us.
And if you are listening, you now know there's a big cupcake in front of us.
It's massive.
It's massive, with candles in it that say 100. No, woo, this is not our 100th episode.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was.
That was a long time ago.
But instead, this is actually to honor JT's past grandmother, who would have been turning 100 years old today. And so, woohoo! So, in honor of honoring our ancestors and things like that, we decided to bring a cupcake and light this for her.
Yes, absolutely.
And you guys can watch me struggle with a lighter.
And while you're doing that, I actually have some fun facts about Grandma Timmons. All right. So obviously she was born in 1923. Her favorite sayings were "Hell's bells" or "Oh piffle."
Oh piffle.
Oh piffle.
When she got upset,
I'm going to start with that one.
When she got upset, it was "Hell's bells" or "Oh piffle."
That's very southern of her.
Oh yeah. These actually might be a couple longer talking points. So let's go ahead and wish her happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Grandma Timmons. Happy birthday to you.
Awesome. And all the smoke's going towards Chris, so that means that Chris is needing some cleansing.
All right, very cool. So she actually graduated with multiple degrees, including a master's degree in botany in the late 40s.
Wow.
That would have been really, really big, obviously, for a woman in the 40s. Absolutely. That's, you know, that's pretty amazing.
She was great with a plant, y'all. Like, seriously.
Yeah, she had a super green thumb.
Got a master's in it. Mm-hmm.
And the last thing is she showed pugs. She, her husband, and dad, they showed pugs, and they, at the most pugs that they've had was 26 at one time.
At one time?
At one time.
That is a lot of...
Yep. And I actually met the last pug that she ever had. His name was Tiki. Tiki 1 Timmons, because after Tiki, we got Tiki 2 Timmons.
Yep.
Tiki 2 was black pug. He was the sweetest thing.
I would like to say that those are excellent Star Wars names. Tiki 1 and Tiki 2.
Tiki 1 and Tiki 2. That's funny.
I love it. Yes.
Cool.
So if you're listening, send a little bit of love to JT's dad today.
Yeah.
Of course, he's missing his mother. But also send a little love to Grandma Timmons out there. And say you love your family, too, while you're at it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We have to thank a couple new parajunkies.
Yes, to send some more love to people.
Yeah.
The new parajunkies.
Yep.
Speaking of 100, how close? Yeah, I was just saying.
We're nearing 100. Nearing 100. All right. So we got, thank you so much, Kelsey, Kristen, Lexi Golford, Dolce Maria, and Alexandra Lynch. Thank y'all so much. It means the world to us that you guys have decided to become pair junkies.
Yes, and if you would like to become a pair junkie, you can find us over on Patreon. You get exclusive content. You get pretty much full access to talking to us all the time. You also get to be a part of a really cool group of people, and you get to be a part of Para Junkie Day that's coming up.
So yes,
Para Junkie Day.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So super exciting stuff going on over on Patreon. But to get into today's topic, we are going to be doing a further deep dive into the Hat Man.
Hat Man.
Since a lot of y'all seem to be having a lot of experiences with Hat Man.
Absolutely. Whenever Hat Man is brought up, people either for the first time really think about experiences that they had in their lives and they're able to categorize it mm-hmm. as a Hat Man experience, because sometimes people don't realize that it's a thing.
Okay.
They only realize that they had a strange experience oftentimes when they were young, and when they think back on it, they're like, you know what? I think he did have a hat. Or they knew he had a hat, but they didn't realize that it was kind of a communal experience that right. lots of people are experiencing it.
So for the people that are like, this is their first episode ever and they don't know anything about Hat Man, what is Hat Man?
So it's kind of a loaded question because and we'll get into this in this episode. There's a lot of different theories of what people think Hat Man is. But basically, the Hat Man is someone that basically is seen usually with a wide brim hat or a top hat, sometimes a fedora, sometimes a bowler's hat,
right.
And usually a what looks like a trench coat.
Right.
A fully shadowy figure. Sometimes people have reported to see him with red eyes. Usually he stands in people's doorways at night, but there have been reports of him being outside. There have been reports of him standing in the corner of your room.
And we're starting to get reports of people hearing him speak.
Yes.
Seeing his eyes, which is, you know, kind of out of the norm, because usually it's a featureless shadow, oftentimes darker mm-hmm. than the darkness around you. So like even like you could be looking into a shadow in the dark and still make out that there's something darker standing in the shadow.
Ooh.
Yes. And yikes. He also usually moves like a human being. I know I'm when I experienced Hat Man when I was a child, I remember him walking from my doorway to my sister's room, and he walked just like a normal person, which is very frightening when you're like 7 years old. But apparently when I did my deep dive into Reddit, you know, going down that rabbit hole of people's experiences, a lot of people report saying the same thing. You know, he walks like a human. He moves like a human. He gives off this domineering energy as like a human almost, but he's not. Like you can tell he's not. Right. It's very weird.
He's a solid presence. He's not ethereal, you know, in that sense of something creepifying. You know, you're looking at something and you're having this issue. There is a distinct sensation that is a person standing there, but then the realization that A, it couldn't be, followed by B, it doesn't feel like a person, but it does feel present.
Right.
So if I'm gonna kind of like play devil's advocate a little bit and say, like, you know, I've since we started talking about the Hat Man, I've actually wondered, is it potentially, I think it's called like a Mandela effect or something like that, because here's the thing, what is a movie, very, very well-known, famous movie, you know where I'm going with this.
You're not the only one to think this, because
oh, really?
This is a common theory,
oh, absolutely.
Actually.
The Freddy Krueger theory. The power of suggestion.
What were you thinking?
The front of The Exorcist.
Oh.
The movie poster. The Exorcist.
Yeah.
It's black figure yep. with that hat.
Interesting.
And it is the most notable, it's one of the most, other than maybe Jaws, one of the most notable movie posters.
Yeah, but even before that, most film noir deal with,
yes.
like, I want to say, is it The Third Man, where it's the shadow of Orson Welles on the wall
yeah.
with the hat, and it's
yes.
just a shadow of him in the fedora. You know, and there's countless things, but what's interesting is that iconography, the idea of a shadow in the shape of a man, and seeing it and realizing it, if we even go back to before hats were a normal thing, mm-hmm. what people saw regularly and reported upon were a figure in a hood, which would also serve the same purpose as a hat. So
right.
when you have these hooded, shrouded figures, but they're like, it's all a shadow, but I know he was wearing robes and a hood, which suggests that in the time that they were seeing this, I mean, the Grim Reaper, by sheer, you know, force of imagery, is a shadowy, shrouded figure wearing a big hooded thing that obscures the face, that obscures the features. So, you know, the argument isn't, are people seeing this Exorcist poster and then implying this shadowy figure, or did the makers of the movie know that this inherently gets people to show a shadowy figure in a hat? Huh. The shadowy figure in a hat, which came first? Which image came first? You know, because I had brought up Spring Hill Jack. Spring Hill Jack was a Victorian era cryptid, but his description was that he wore a cloak, a cape, or a long coat, and a hat that obscured his face. And in Spring Hill Jack stories, that sometimes you'll see his red eyes, and a lot of times he breathes sulfurous smoke. So, you know, but the imagery of a figure whose face is obscured, who's wearing a wide brim hat, that it goes to that area. And then you could stretch it further, because highwaymen, classically wore big hats, masks, you know, scarves around their face, long overcoats, and they would hold people up. So they're an object of fear. Riding down the roads, you might be jacked by, you know, a highwayman.
Scarecrows,
excellent example. Scarecrows, and scarecrows are used all the time in horror imagery. Because they are freaky. They are human-esque, and they live in the uncanny valley. If you've ever been around a scarecrow that was lovingly made, they're oftentimes creepy as, you know, all day. You're looking at them and you're like, oh, why? Why did you do that? It's like, what do you mean? It's to scare away crows. It's like, it's going to scare everything away. That is going to scare everything away.
So the thing is, though, Jay, I will tell you this. I don't think I had seen The Exorcist at the point when I saw The Shadow Man. And my sister, I know for a fact that she did not see that movie.
But the front of the movie.
No,
the poster.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, Jay, like, my sister and I had the same experience. And my sister does not like scary stuff. She's not into it. You know, it's interesting that, like, years after we had this experience, we both were able to describe the same thing. And it was me talking about my experience and she saying, wait, I saw that same thing in my in my thing. So there's a lot of people who kind of think the same thing as you, but a lot of people attribute its creation to Freddy Krueger.
Okay.
But there have been multiple people who have come out and said, like, I experienced the Hat Man way before Freddy Krueger was ever a thing. And there's actually some evidence that there were drawings on cave walls of something that could resemble a Hat Man-like entity.
Okay.
Well, even Wes Craven, in The Creation of Freddy Krueger, speaks about the phantom with the hat that that obscures the face and that notion of the hidden thing. Because he was drawing from, you know, cultural boogeyman, you know, and it came across his plate that a character who's wearing something that obscures the face, because in the first instances that you see Freddy Krueger in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, he is just a shadow with that silhouette. You know, with this bizarre, inhuman yet human form.
Okay.
So a lot of the boiling down of the theories equivalents Hat Man to being this eternal being of sorts. Okay. Something that's always been around. Now, where it kind of tangents is why the Hat Man is here and doing this. Because some people, you know, are like, he's just a simple shadow person. And depending on your belief system, shadow people can be evil entities, and some shadow people can just be, you know, a thing that's there.
Remnants,
right. Exactly. So, you know, there's some people who think that the Hat Man is solely just a watcher, someone who just is kind of around, that's observing humanity. But then you go on to the far other side of things, and some people believe that he could be an extraterrestrial entity that basically has been around to, his job is to observe humans.
Well, the classic Men in Black.
Right.
Classic Men in Black are people who wear all black, they have fedoras, you know, they're hat men when it comes down to it. And it's interesting because we know and can trace the lineage of Slenderman.
Yeah.
We know who created Slenderman. Mm-hmm. We know for what purpose. And we know that Slenderman went from being a fabricated thing to being a heavily believed, even influential supernatural entity through the power of suggestion, through the power of people's beliefs and people's ideologies, and the fact that shadows are so desperate for form and so desperate for identity that you can literally name your poison. It's like the end of Ghostbusters. You know, they thought of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Stay Puft Marshmallow Man showed up. So, you know, the Hat Man might just be a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It may just be a collective dread and fear that we have of this shadowy unknown figure that kind of, you know, lives on the periphery, and we're giving it shape because we are kind of watching the birth of a cryptid. We're watching the birth of an entity that when you start scratching at it, it's like, wow, this seems to go way back. You know, this seems to have legs that go way, way back. And these might be just loose associations that we're able to solidify. And the more solid we make it, the more solid he becomes. This is what I always, you know, talk about in terms of what is the power of the human mind, what is the power of the human spirit. We are responsible for the reality we exist in. You know, you hear about people doing manifestations, you hear about people doing all these things that to improve their lives through the sheer power of will. Well, our fears are very solid beliefs. They kind of live in this weird place. We can be afraid of things that we do not think exist, but we still fear them. And that becomes this sort of amalgamous place where things can become a force in our reality.
Yeah, it's kind of like It.
It is like It. Well, and Stephen King, well, almost every horror writer crosses the threshold of saying which comes first, the fear of the creature or the creature.
Yeah, you know.
And that becomes this idea that there are maybe spiritual things, maybe just, you know, raw material all around us, and we're molding it like, you know, a clay sculpture, and we're saying, okay, and then he had horns, and then he had a tail, and then all of a sudden we're seeing and feeling these things. When you get into that like more tribal sensation of existence, when tribes would gather together, they would create the monsters of their, you know, of their belief structure based on a sense of protection, a need to ward and to be together against a thing. And the thing that they create oftentimes was a hodgepodge of the dangers around them. And then maybe they continued on. Maybe they became physical. Maybe Bigfoot is just a bunch of native beliefs of the danger of, you know, the encroaching other, the thing that is out there. And it manifested into a reality and manifested into something that people are still experiencing to this day, echoes of belief that turn to solid things.
Right. I mean, the thing is I'm kind of on the side of, you know, this might be an entity that's been around for a long time, just because it's so strange that there's been so many accounts of this entity for a long time, but it's almost like, you know, with the invention of the internet and people actually being able to share their experiences and get to know other people who they're like, wait, I had a similar experience of things of that nature. And that is what's made it more of a sensation. Okay. Maybe it was more of an isolated situation.
Right. It was very dismissible.
Right.
When you're alone. When you're alone and you have an experience, you can quickly be like, well, you know, I guess that happened, but no. And then somebody else, because that's what I was saying was when I talk to people, I was like, have you ever heard of Hat Man? A lot of people are like, no. And then I explained it to them. I can watch their brains being like, oh gosh, when I was a kid, or oh gosh, when, you know, when I was a teenager, you know, just a few years ago, they had this story that is forming in their heads, a memory of which they suppressed because it served no purpose.
Yeah.
It was like, what a weird moment. What a weird moment when I thought there was a guy in a hat just standing over there. But when they hear that other people have this experience, it suddenly becomes almost obsessive to them. Yeah, the para-junkie gene kicks in. You know, all of a sudden they're like, oh, ghost heroin, let's go.
Let's go.
So then you find them doing deep dives into Hat Man and finding that, oh gosh, this is something that people have reported and recorded, and there's a lot of issues. And when you think of like just the history of ghosts that, or spirits that you know of, we live with the idea that we're being watched by some entity. That has always been a part of our culture, is that there's a guardian angel out there, mm-hmm. that there's some right. some threshold lurker watching us, Santa Claus. You know, we accept that that there are spiritual beings whose entire responsibility in the universe is to watch us. You know, and in some cases intervene when there's danger, but oftentimes that's not the case. They're not watching us to help us. They're watching us almost as if to record our existence.
Something. Yeah, that'd be what an alien does for sure.
Right.
Sure. And that brings up the whole alien concept yeah. because a lot of people don't believe that aliens are extraterrestrial. They think they're extra dimensional.
Yeah.
You know, that our obsession with scientific explanation always falls short because our science isn't there yet. We haven't gotten far enough along to really examine what it means to have interdimensional travel or interdimensional beings, and whether or not they are in fact terrestrial, just of a different dimension. And if we're talking about time, then time being the dimension that separates us, all of these things become huge questions. And who knows, on the other dimension, it may be very
sure
ordinary to them to like, I'm going to peek in on that guy. Yep, he's still there. Okay, everything's fine.
Now, I wonder if, you know, their purpose is to be scary, like solely because, like, Madison, you know this, like, really, really well about me, is like, when what I find very frightening, you know, because obviously fear is subjective and everything, but what I find very frightening is when something is looking at you through a window. There's like a barrier, but it's a breachable barrier, and it's looking at you through a window or through a door threshold, and it's almost like, I want to come in. And that, to me, you know, and I've used this in horror. There's a lot of directors that have used this in filmmaking for sure, because it is an inherently frightening thing. I wonder if they know that. I wonder if the Hat Man knows that, and the Hat Man is like, you know, let's see if I can get this person to notice me, because I'm silhouetting myself in your, you know. And like, if you think about it, like the door being cracked or closed or open, I mean, that means something to kids, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
Like, that means something to kids.
Well, so here's where I get into, you know, when I start really thinking about Hat Man, I'm like, I feel like there are some Hat Men that are not inherently trying to scare you. Cause at least, like, when I think back to my experience, I was freaked out because I was like, that's creepy looking, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't necessarily feel threatened. Like, I didn't feel like I was going to be harmed. It mm-hmm. just felt uneasy. But
you noticed it.
Well, of course I noticed it. You know, it's
but
like,
if it's in the shadows,
no,
then
so
you might
here's
not notice
the thing
it.
About Hat Man, when you actually see it, it is darker. It's like the blackest black you could imagine.
It
like,
is the it absence is, of something.
Yes. Huh. And so it's, you know, it was more so just like this uneasy feeling of like, ugh, stop staring at me. That's really freaky, bro. You know, it's, but then there are some people that do get that sensation of like, he's going to hurt me. Like our previous ghost mail where, you know, the listener was saying how it's been following them and, you know, like the red eyes and like, is this some kind of omen or whatever? I feel like that's a different type of Hat Man.
Sure. And that goes into that whole concept, because if it is feeding off of your fear, if it is creating your fear, then it seems like it should be getting stronger, more aggressive mm-hmm. and, you know, because it's feeding, because it's getting the fear off. So it doesn't make sense that these isolated events, because that's oftentimes when I'm talking to people, they'll have like one event in their life where it's like, oh, you know, one time I had a friend who was like, I stayed out past when I was supposed to get into a house, which was, mm-hmm. you know, he was at a playground when he was 8. And back in the day, when the street lights come on, you better be in the house. So he was out and the street lights came on.
Okay.
And he was like, oh no. And so the story he tells me is he jumps off the swing set and he lands and he starts to run. But as he's running directly under a street lamp was a man standing there with this wide hat. And when he first saw it, it froze him. Like he was like, don't move. Like if I don't move, he can't see me kind of thing. You know, right. It's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. but he said, I remember watching him and he just started walking backwards. out of the light, into the shadows and into a bush past him. And he never knew if it was a real person, if it was a ghost. But when I told him about Hat Man, he was like, let me tell you this story. You'll never believe this. I had an experience with a guy, and he never once thought it was a ghost.
Sure.
He never once thought it was, you know, something threatening or something bizarre. So, you know, when we think about Hat Man encounters, so many of them are isolated. So when we hear, hear like repeated visitations of the Hat Man, it's like, mm-hmm. you might be having some different relationship right. with the Hat Man. or it might be a different entity that has the same properties. This is a fascinating field of discovery because it's all taking in the stories and listening to them and saying, okay, there is a category that seems to be the watcher. He's just watching. And when you see him, it seems accidental.
Sure.
It seems like maybe he's always there, but just every now and then he's, you know, accidentally somewhere you can see him. Mm-hmm. And then there are accounts where he's coming in, he's coming closer, he's trying to communicate. And the one that I found interesting was the harbinger of death. Like, he appears and then someone in your family dies or someone you know dies. That is like, oh, that's a whole different thing, because I'm familiar with the Lady in Black. The Lady in Black is a very old story, a very old ghost that means that a child in your family will die if you see the Lady in Black. I'm like, oh, that's very specific. What a specific ghost. And then to find out that it's kind of a flat and wide story. If you see the Lady in Black, a child in your family mm-hmm. is going to pass. And I'm like, okay, that almost sounds like the Hat Man incident that you're talking about, except it's not exclusively a child, and it's not exclusively your family.
And it's not trying to kill anyone.
No, maybe. It's just telling.
Well,
it's,
and that's it. The Lady in Black is not trying to kill anybody. The Lady in Black is a sign.
Oh, like Mothman.
Kind of like Mothman, absolutely. And I think we had a story like that where somebody was saying that when the Hat Man came, there was going to be death.
Yes, you know?
And
yes,
that's
yes.
kind of an interesting thing, because some people do have the uncanny ability to predict death. And it may be a type of spirit that, you know, you may or may not be able to see. But when you see it, might be the shape of a Hat Man. That might be just the garb of the specter of death. You know, like I said, the Grim Reaper is literally a shrouded figure, a shadowy shrouded figure whose features are obscured by his hood. And we've taken to putting the skeleton, because we also have just a skeleton. In early images of the Grim Reaper, it was just a skeleton. He wasn't wearing robes.
Yeah,
it was just a skeleton with a scythe. And then over time, people are like, I have seen this thing, this specter of death, this, you know, and the more imagery that we would get of the Grim Reaper in that cloak with this thing that hung over its face so that you couldn't tell, you know, that it was the Grim Reaper, you know, and that gave way to different, because, you know, I think that image was not unlike what you would see walking down the street.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're living, walking down the street and people are walking, looking like this, you're like, oh, that's just a weird guy wearing a hood. That's the same thing here. Hats are not so uncommon that we're like, oh, well, that's weird.
Right.
You know, you're like, oh, it's a guy wearing a hat. And then, of course, you hear all these other stories. You're like, oh, I'm a part of an international conspiracy of spirits.
You know, it's interesting, though, that there's so many different omens for death, specifically.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, if you get into tea leaf reading and any kind of divination, or, you know, like, the theory of, like, black dogs.
Black being dog.
The grim, if you will.
Thank you, Harry Potter.
Tartan is not a grim.
No, well, he doesn't look like a grim.
Oh. No, the black dog is like a giant.
Like a big, hulking, like
almost
wolf-like.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Creature.
Yeah, if that, like, shows up to you, basically, like, you're about to, like...
Now, you know, so the Hat Man mainly comes, like, shows itself to, like, kids, right?
Not necessarily. I think, you know...
I think a lot of people's first experiences are child. I hear it a lot that people say... When I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I definitely know that there are plenty of adults who have seen him and experienced him. And for the first time, too. Like, not like, oh, this has happened before. It's literally like, oh, this is weird.
What if it's like a protector? Instead of something trying to scare you, like, what if it's actually, like, looking over you, making sure you're good?
I mean, that's a theory, too. You know?
That's the watcher idea, the guardian angel.
So, like, the problem is there's so many nuances as to what it could be.
Yeah.
Because... You know, a lot of entities can look horrifying, but they're actually good entities. And then there's a lot of really bad entities that are beautiful.
Heard of a biblical description of what an angel looks like?
God, that's what I thought that.
They're
that's
horrifying.
What I thought, right when
they're
she said
absolutely
that.
Horrible. Well, and it's funny because, and you talk about this, I want to say Black Mass does a good job of is it Black Mass? No, Midnight Mass does a good job of that one statement that is inherent to angels. Be not afraid. If you were a beautiful blonde winged, you know, thing going, oh, you know, you don't have to say, be not afraid. Be not afraid is not, you know, something that beautiful things have to start. You know, I've never been approached by a supermodel going, be not afraid. You know, it's because it's a multi-winged eyeball spinning monster of blah. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's terrifying. So be not afraid. I'm sorry. It's too late. I'm looking at you. I'm afraid. So, yeah.
You know, and it could just be that a lot of times why these situations stick with us, you know, is because when you're a kid and you see something staring at you, that's unnerving, mm-hmm. you know, and even if it is a good entity or some sort of, you know, child protecting entity, it's, you know, maybe they'll evolve one day and maybe be a little less creepy or.
Sure. Well, and with understanding comes less fear. Fear is inherently the unknown. It is inherently what you don't know. At the base of all fears comes this threshold of knowledge. The second you dip into what you don't know, that's where fear really begins. Because if you're afraid of anything, it's not the thing itself. It's the unknown quality, quantity, the unknown purpose, the unknown damage it can do you, the unknown aspect of any given thing. Because even people who are afraid of, like, you know, I'm terribly afraid of fire because I got burned when I was a kid, they're using, like, the trauma to suggest that that was what was afraid. But the truth is you're afraid of how much worse it can get because you know how bad it was. You're not right. afraid of experiencing it again. You're afraid of experiencing something beyond what you've already experienced. I have a terrible phobia. Well, I have so many phobias. but I do have a terrible phobia of shots, of getting shots. And in my experience, I can't even feel a shot. But I still have this fear, this deep fear. I can't look at getting a shot. When somebody gives me a shot, I look away. And I'm diabetic, so I have to give myself shots. I look away, which is terrible. Don't do that. But there is this notion that I was like, well, what am I afraid of? I know what it feels like. I know mm-hmm. I'll survive it. I know it doesn't, you know, it doesn't actually hurt. I was like, well, what I'm really afraid of is this unknown sensation that I've ascribed to the shot. Something like, you know, the needle breaking off in my arm or some weird thing like that, which is an unknown. And there's no reason for me to fear it because I've never experienced it and I've never known anybody to experience it. But somehow it is a part of my fear structure is, oh, I'm terrified of needles. I still don't understand it because I can administer shots to myself, but I still have the phobia.
So why do y'all think we got 3 emails in a row? Like literally in a row, that were about the Hat Man.
So I do think it's slightly a coincidence, but a part of it being is that it's become such a worldwide phenomenon right now about the Hat Man because of the nature of TikTok and the internet in general. People are starting to open their minds to certain things. And also, I think it's a really common experience that so many people have had. And sometimes that's their only ghost experience. And that's, you know, totally fine. But I think it's like the internet either, you know, bringing these things into our lives because we now know they exist or, you know, just solely bringing out the various Hat Man stories from the woodworks, you know.
Yeah, it's also the idea of lining up of things because I feel like a trend can easily be started. And even if it is very subtle, because I remember, you know, like when I first heard of the Mothman and then it became like such an avalanche of information about the Mothman. And there is a word for it, which is when you first hear something almost immediately after you start hearing it everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. like when you buy a car. If you buy a car that you've never really driven before, like, you know, oh, I've got a, you know, Ford Escort and I bought this Ford Escort and then you go driving around and all of a sudden you see Ford Escorts everywhere. You know, everyone's driving a Ford Escort. How weird. And that's the kind of thing that this is. It's it is kind of coincidental, but it's aligning with the fact that we're looking. It's aligning with the fact that we are opening to the idea and we're becoming more aware of it. And we're probably putting out some strong vibes of we'll talk your ear off about this subject if you put it in front of us. So
comment your Hat Man stories. Yeah. Maybe we'll like
absolutely.
Read them.
Please
read all the Hat Man stories. Yeah.
Bring the Hat Man. Send it to our ghost mail.
Yes, yeah. Ghost mail and all that.
And and don't forget your favorite cryptids. So many wonderful cryptids are out there, and we are not shy about cryptids. We spend zero time hating on any specific, supernatural entity, and we're not afraid of UFOs either. If you got some UFO stories, please share those because they're fascinating. They're endlessly fascinating, and for some reason, there is a huge divide in the community of like supernatural and extraterrestrial. And it's like, why? People can believe 100% in Bigfoot and be like, there are no such thing as UFOs and back and forth. Or, people believe in ghosts and think that UFOs are trash, or people believe in UFOs and think that ghosts are ridiculous. And it's like, what is happening? Why would we draw such thick lines around things we just don't understand or know? It's fascinating to me because, like, if you're going to believe in something that is fantastical and very difficult to prove, you at least have to leave a little open room for everything else that is, that exists in that same framework. We spend zero time telling people that what they think is out there is ridiculous.
It's actually interesting because I think there's a lot of crossover between extraterrestrial beliefs and otherworldly beings and paranormal. I will tell you guys a story that I don't think I've ever mentioned on this podcast. Very weird one. Florida is a weird place in general, and I think I lived in a hotbed of odd things that would happen. But when I was a kid, the way I had my bed positioned was basically I had it in the corner of my room right next to this big window so that if I turned over, what would that be, to my right, you could see right out the window. So basically, one night, it was probably like, I want to say like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. or something like that, random day of the week. It wasn't anything like a special night or something. And I wake up because I just hear on my window. And I, mind you, my house was two stories and there was no way to get up there. So it was very weird that there'd be knocking on my window. And so I ignore it at first because I was like, that's weird. Maybe it's a bird or something. And then I hear again and I'm like, okay. So I like start to get nervous. I'm like, I don't want to really open my eyes right now because it's like really
it's like
freaky.
You don't want to be scared.
Right. But eventually on the third knock, I open my eyes and I look out the window and there's this silver figure like shining. Like if you've ever seen pyrite, like the crystal pyrite, it glistened like that with blacked out eyes, no hair. No features, like no nose, very small lips and things like that. No notable features standing outside my window. And I will never forget that image in my head. And so from there, that was kind of when I started getting interested in more extraterrestrial thoughts because I was like, that doesn't look like any ghosts I've ever seen in my life. And why would it be tapping on my window in the middle of the night on my second floor house? JT's like, I'm never sleeping in that room again.
Literally.
But I never had it happen again. But I did have so many dreams of aliens when I was a kid. After that experience, for years, it would be the same reoccurring dream of me being brought up into a ship and things like that.
What?
I'm not kidding.
And worth mentioning, Florida is a hotbed of UFO activity. A lot of sightings in Florida, and people think that it's because, we have Cape Canaveral there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're literally sending things into space there, so a lot of people believe that there's a lot of extraterrestrial activity at the spot where we send ships into space. They come and they gather, and I've heard countless stories. I actually met a man once who claimed to be who worked for the United States government, and he was a full-on participant in communicating with, he was claimed to be basically a radio that the government can use to talk to aliens. And I never really thought about it until years later. they started releasing the documents mm-hmm. on it, and the program that he said he was a part of is all over those documents. Oh. And I was like, so at the very least, he knew about the program. You know, whatever his involvement was, he was utilizing all the terms and all the phrases because they stood out in my head. But when I was reading through, and a lot of these were redacted, you're reading and it's like, oh gosh. You know, he was not, you know, at the very least, he was dead on
sure.
with all of these events, which made me wonder because he said some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because he said that, you know, the government utilized psychics, remote viewers to facilitate communication because basically aliens can speak or communicate through waves that are mental, not like radio. They don't use radio waves. They use something that our minds use when we're practicing like remote viewing or ESP or anything like that. Fascinating. But at the time that I heard it, I was like, oh, you know, I can't process this.
Yeah.
You know, this is so foreign to me. But I always kept it in the back of my head because he was a very interesting person. He didn't seem, you know, crazy by any stretch of the imagination, but he had been shot in the head. So, you know,
and
that's what he was, a ranger who got shot in the head. And he said when he woke up, he had abilities and he was able to hone them. And then he became a part of this program. And I was just like, oh, that's very interesting. But at the same time, so far from my experience, you know, because again, I've been chasing ghosts all my life, but when I come to UFOs and aliens, the ghost hunting communities really don't participate a lot.
So
I always had a fascination, but it was never a part of our conversations. We never really spent a lot of time sitting down and going, hey, should we talk about, you know, extraterrestrials? And now there's a lot of talk about a lot of cryptids possibly mm-hmm. just being things that are traveling interdimensionally. Like the reason why we can't find them is because they don't live here.
Yeah,
they just kind of pop in, do their thing, pop out.
Friend reminds me of the play Bug.
Yes, it does.
By Tracy Letts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yes, if you guys want to hear an episode about aliens and UFOs and stuff, I would love to talk about that because I have some interesting thoughts.
I do as well.
So if that is something you're interested in, let us know. But we're going to go ahead and sign off on this one. But thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a ghost story, doesn't have to just be Hat Man, you can send it over to ghostmail@hauntedcitypodcast.com. Also, make sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram under Haunted City Podcast. And you can find us on all social media platforms under that name. But thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And my name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And stay spooky, y'all.